You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Even though the cold, slushy weather is far from romantic, chances are slim that you've forgotten it's Valentine's Day. And here to help you make the day an even lovelier one for your special someone is one of our very favorite people, who also happens to be a terrific baker and cook, Melissa Clark. She's a James Beard Award-winning food writer whose column A Good Appetite appears in the dining section of the New York Times each Wednesday. And you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Good Appetite. And by the way, we invite you to feel free to give us a call. Any questions or suggestions that you might have about what to make tonight, our number is 212-433-9692. You can write in on our show page at WNYC.org. And if you want to tweet us, our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, how are you?
Is Valentine's Day a big thing for you?
It's not. We like to be...
I have to cross out 10 questions now.
Oh, no. Well, okay, I can say it is if you want me to.
No, it's okay.
No, I mean, we actually like to take and have a romantic dinner quite often. You know, we'll light the candles on a regular basis. We'll dim the lights. We'll make a romantic dinner, not just for Valentine's Day. So when Valentine's Day does roll around, for us, it's really just a big excuse to open a really good bottle of wine. That's
And you don't have a large selection of recipes that you draw from on February 14th?
No, we do. We do like to do something a little more celebratory than normally. It's just that we have the candles and we have sort of have the romantic setting very often. But I like to do something a little extravagant. I think it's Valentine's Day is just an excuse. If you love to go out to eat, it's an excuse to go out to eat and to go to a really nice restaurant, something maybe more expensive than usual. If you like to cook, and of course I like to cook, I say make something special at home, something that you normally wouldn't. For example, a big fat ribeye steak, a big juicy one, the kind you have to get at the butcher, you know, an inch and a half, 2 inches thick. We love that. I mean, that's just a special thing. And we'll serve, maybe we'll have oysters with it, which we'll talk about later as an aphrodisiac, whether or not that's true. They are delicious. Maybe we'll get a little caviar, just something to make it a little more special.
And you actually have supplied us with a recipe for,
yes, for that steak.
A bone-in ribeye steak, which is a pretty simple recipe. Is it good on days like this to not get too ambitious?
I think so. I think anytime you are more interested in romance than you are, I mean, the food is always part of it, but I think you should keep it simple. Serve something that doesn't take, that's not going to stress you out. You don't want to go into this day or really any romantic day stressed out. You want to just be calm. You want to make something that is super simple, like a steak, or you want to make something ahead. So if you have, of course, we're talking about this on Valentine's Day, so it's not a great, but for next year, if you want to make something ahead, that's good too, because then you don't have to worry about it on the day. You can just take it out. Little pot pies are nice. You can do pot pie for two with a little, you know, heart-shaped crust on top, something like that. But since today is Valentine's Day, I say if you're thinking about it now for the first time, think simple, but think something a little special.
Did things change when you had a child?
Oh, yeah. Well, she's part of the fun.
On Valentine's.
Yeah, she's
How
part
old is
of
she
it.
Now?
She's five, and she is part of it. She and I made cookies, heart-shaped cookies for her class. And she loves Valentine's Day because she's going to get lots of chocolate today, and she knows it. And, you know, she's part of it. It's not just a romance between my husband and myself. It's a family romance.
Now, we mentioned aphrodisiacs. They're in the mind, aren't they?
They're totally in the mind. This is a good story. A very long time ago, I went with Dr. Ruth Westheimer on an aphrodisiac tour of New York where she was promoting artichokes as an aphrodisiac. And I was the food stylist, and I carried her basket of artichokes, and we went to TV stations and radio stations. She talked about why artichokes were such a great aphrodisiac. And the reason is because you can feed each other, which I think is lovely. So I think but what it all boiled down to was what she said, and which I firmly believe, any food that you think is sexy is an aphrodisiac.
But after you feed each other, then you eat the heart.
Then you eat
now,
the
I'm
heart.
I'm not sure
exactly.
that's so romantic.
Well,
as wonderful as artichoke hearts are.
If you just think of it as an artichoke heart, you know, you want to have hearts on Valentine's Day, so you want to have artichoke hearts on Valentine's Day.
Don't
think about the eating part.
So do you steam them?
Yeah, you can steam them. You can boil them. Steaming takes longer, but it's probably you get a more even, delicate result. I've made them in the microwave. I know you're looking at me like a microwave, but yes, I have made them, and that works pretty quickly. And you know what else is great? If you have a pressure cooker, get your pressure cooker out. I have actually seen artichokes in the market. Obviously, they're not local, but they look pretty good. And if you're looking for something a little bit exotic, something you can feed each other, you just want to cook your artichokes, a little bowl of melted butter, and that, I think, is romantic.
And some people actually cook baby artichokes in oil. Do you think that's a good idea?
Oh, yeah, if you find the baby. I haven't seen the baby ones, but if you are listening somewhere where you can get baby artichokes, again, those have they're mostly heart. So it's a perfect thing to serve on Valentine's Day.
The big problem is getting rid of the choke. Otherwise, it's
Well, the babies don't have a lot of choke. Usually you can have the baby artichokes, and if you just look in, you'll barely see any of the fuzz.
I've heard that artichokes were not popular until after World War II. They were mostly in Italy. They were mostly a staple of Jewish cuisine.
I have heard that too. I'm glad we've
come
to our senses.
And then the rest of the Italians discovered.
Just never got them, yeah. No, I'm glad we've all come to our senses and discovered the artichoke, whether it's Valentine's Day or not. It is a great, it's just a delicious vegetable. I love them. Not wine friendly, though. That's the thing. And we are going to open a good bottle of wine, so. Maybe
well,
I think
but chocolate isn't wine-friendly either, and chocolate is definitely associated with Valentine's
Day. Chocolate is, and chocolate is another one of those foods that everyone thought was, or still thinks possibly, is an aphrodisiac, because chocolate is it's a very complex substance, and it has many, many different chemicals in it. And you actually do have a reaction. When you eat chocolate, lots of things happen in your brain, and there are studies that show that people become a little bit happier when they eat chocolate. I mean, that might be sweets in general. Well, you eat a little bit of chocolate. You don't have to eat a lot of chocolate.
You prefer milk or dark?
I like dark, but milk chocolate is what my daughter prefers. So we have both. We have lots of chocolate in the house for tonight.
And if you had to have one chocolate dessert, what would it be?
Okay, for Valentine's Day, this is a really nice chocolate dessert that you can feed each other. Again, just the idea of being able to feed each other. You have an excuse to do this. Chocolate fondue. And chocolate fondue is so easy to make. You melt chocolate. I like to add, I actually like to add coconut milk, but you can also add heavy cream, either one. And you just heat the chocolate. You bring it out. It'll stay liquefied if you add enough liquid to it. I mean, it's almost like this rich, you could practically drink it. It's practically like hot chocolate. It's so good. And then just get some simple things to dip in there. You know, strawberries out of season, but they're pretty and they taste good with the, you know, dunked into a chocolate fondue. Another thing that's great in chocolate fondue is get your favorite cookies, like plain butter cookies, or cut up a pound cake. And this is a slightly Spanish twist, get a baguette, cut it up, toast it, put olive oil on it. You know, the whole olive oil chocolate thing? Put a teeny bit of salt, and then dip it into the chocolate fondue. That is sophisticated, that is different, and it is so easy.
My guest is Melissa Clark, who is a James Beard Award-winning food writer. She writes the Wednesday Good Appetite column for the dining section in the New York Times. You can also find it at newyorktimes.com, and of course, she is the author of We Have Yet to Determine How Many Cookbooks, but at least
we're still in the 30s. I've been very busy at the Times lately. I haven't written one in the past year.
Now, oysters are often considered to be aphrodisiacs, and I'm not sure on a family show we can go into why.
Let's just say they look like they bring to mind things.
Uh-huh.
So that's enough, right?
But oysters are fun.
Yes.
On the other hand, they can be hard to shuck, and that isn't very sexy.
Yes, that is very true. If you are thinking about having oysters and you're not comfortable shucking them, you might want to ask the fishmonger to do it for you. They'll shuck them, and they'll give them to you on the side, and then you just put them back into the shells. I've done that when I've been pressed for time. The last thing you want to do is get a wound in your hand from shucking an oyster if you're not comfortable doing it.
You can use a screwdriver. Just go to the joint, and that works just as well as those shucking tools.
That's so true, and they're blunt, and they're not going to cut your hand. Yeah, those little oyster knives are sharper than they need to be often, so be careful. But another thing is you don't even need to serve oysters on the half shell. You can buy oysters already shucked in the liquid, and then you can fry them. Fried oysters, I mean, I think fried is an aphrodisiac, actually. Anything fried is going to make me so happy that it's just an aphrodisiac.
You prefer them fried to raw?
I like them both ways. But if you don't want to serve them raw, or if you prefer them cooked, I think fried oysters, take your oysters, dredge them in a little bit of, you can use cornmeal or good breadcrumbs, cracker crumbs, and then you can fry them either in oil or butter. butter-fried oysters, yum.
If you are having them raw, do you like them straight or with lemon or some tartar sauce or ketchup or
I like
what?
Them straight. If they're on the bland side, I'll add lemon. But if they've got enough flavor, you know, depending on where they're from and how they're handled, and sometimes people rinse them. Don't rinse your oysters because you're rinsing away all the flavor. Just take a paper towel if you get a little grit in there and just pat them dry. And you want all that lovely oyster. You just want all that liquid in the shell with the oysters when you eat them. That's the really sensuous pleasure is just slurping them back.
Do you have a favorite source of oysters?
That is a good question.
There are certain states that we identify with
oysters. I really like cold water oysters. I like East Coast, Northern East Coast, you know, all along. I mean, Long Island oysters are great, too. Anywhere on the East Coast, I prefer them to the West Coast oysters, and I like the colder weather, colder temperature waters rather than the southern states.
Now, most of the things we've been talking about so far would not be appealing to vegetarians.
No, but there are lots of aphrodisiac foods except the artichokes.
And chocolate.
And chocolate. But here's an interesting little fact for you. Did you know that potatoes, the humble potato, was at one point such a fancy and refined food? We're talking 17th, 18th century Europe because they were brand new. They were considered aphrodisiacs.
So tomatoes too, weren't they? Love
yes,
apples.
Exactly. Tomatoes apples. Too. So you know, think about. We're going to do. I'm definitely doing potatoes tonight. I have these fabulous little potatoes I got at the farmer's market, and I'm going to boil them. I'm going to smash them, and I'm going to saute them. I think with either duck fat or suet, because I have both in the freezer.
Well, it's hard to find duck fat, isn't it?
You can use olive oil, too. But you want to, and then you just get the pan really hot. You sear them, or you can do them in a really hot oven. But you cook them first, smash them, and then, you know, sear them until they're crunchy. Delicious.
So you don't boil them whole?
I do. I boil them whole and then drain them. And then when they're cool
and you
enough,
say smash,
smash,
not mash.
Yeah, just take a warm potato in your hand after they've cooled enough to be able to do this and just gently press down until the skin breaks. And then what that does is it exposes the potato flesh to the hot oil, which is what gives you that crunch.
And that gives you the crispy...
little crispy bits.
And we have that recipe as
you
well.
You have that recipe, yes.
And you can find it on our show page at WNYC.org. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org if you want to communicate with Melissa Clark right now. Or you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. We have all sorts of other ways that you can communicate with us on our Facebook page or on Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And while you're doing one of those things, we're going to take a little break. Again, the number 212-433-9692. My guest is Melissa Clark, whose column, A Good Appetite, appears in the dining section at the New York Times every Wednesday. You can also find it on newyorktimes.com, and you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is at Good Appetite. We're back with Melissa Clark, the James Beard Award-winning food writer, and she visits us regularly to talk about various aspects of the American cuisine, I guess European cuisine, too. I mean, we branched out pretty much, haven't we?
Yeah,
you cover it all?
Well, I'll talk about anything I know anything about, or I'll talk about things I don't know something about, but that's probably not a good idea.
And we are curious about what you are making for Valentine's Day. Do you make anything for Valentine's Day? You mentioned earlier going to a restaurant. Well, it's hard to get into a restaurant tonight, and many of them have special dinners, but they also jack up the prices. So.
Yes, it's like New Year's Eve. Exactly.
I'm not sure that
only
this is
tops.
The night to go to a restaurant. On the other hand... I gather a number of them are really suffering because of the weather, so you might be able to get in to a restaurant you couldn't have gotten into otherwise.
I think that you have a very good shot at getting a cancellation, and getting a table that's been canceled. So try if you really want to go out and you don't want to cook, although I encourage you all to stay home and cook because I do think I think it's just inherently more romantic if you can make something that doesn't stress you out, if you make something very simple.
And our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Another so-called aphrodisiac is figs, and I'm assuming that's also because of their shape.
Exactly. I was just thinking about this. I think we're not very imaginative as humans. You know, we see something and it looks like something else, and all of a sudden we start thinking. So I think shape is very important to think about. Apparently bananas and carrots are aphrodisiacs too. So, but again, I think
anything that you eat. So what are they the rest of the year?
Bananas, breakfast, and lunch snacks.
Well,
it's
I don't
not
know.
Very
I put
romantic,
some banana on my cereal. I'm starting to feel very sexy right now. Mushrooms, do they qualify as aphrodisiacs?
You know, again, it's the same thing. Certain mushrooms look certain ways. Mushrooms are also another – it's not just foods that look like something. It's also foods that are exotic, foods that are expensive, foods that are hard to find, foods that are rare are also considered aphrodisiac because of the effort that goes into getting them, because they're special when you bring them out. They make someone – I mean, think about it this way. What makes someone feel more loved than the fact that you've done something special when you're baking your dinner? So if mushrooms, if wild mushrooms are hard to get, they're hard to gather, they're very seasonal, and you bring those, especially in February – I mean, now they're easy to get, but, you know, historically – that is a special thing. That is a romantic thing, and that makes someone feel loved. And Valentine's Day really is about, at the bottom, it's making the person you love know that you love them. And I think there are a lot of different ways you can show them that with a meal that you make.
Is that why caviar is often associated with Valentine's Day? It's expensive.
Exactly.
It's you're showing someone you love them because you're willing to pay a lot of money.
Exactly. I mean, think about seduction foods. You know, typical seduction foods would be champagne and caviar and these very extravagant foods that you would use to seduce someone else. So that's why that's on that list as well.
Well, but caviar is harder to get these days.
It is.
And it's become extraordinarily expensive.
Well, but you could also, you know, not just find caviar. I mean, it doesn't have to be sturgeon roe. It can be trout roe, it can be salmon roe. You know, those are a lot less expensive, but still they have that same, you know, salty pop, which is so good with sour cream on a blini.
Or creme fraiche.
Or creme fraiche, or on a potato chip with creme fraiche. I mean, there's lots of ways to eat caviar. I don't think I'm ever at a loss. If someone gives me a tin of caviar, I'll find a way to eat it and to share it. And also, it's another good food for sharing. You know, you get a small tin of caviar, and it's just enough for two.
Another vegetable that we might have thought of, but it's out of season, is asparagus.
Yes, exactly. But you can get it. You can get anything these days, anytime. So if you do see good asparagus, and that's something, I mean, that would actually go really well with a steak. We're going to serve the very unromantic kale with our steak. Kale is not, I don't think it's an aphrodisiac in anybody's book, but we have it, and it's seasonal. And
Well, not if you're wilting it anyway.
Exactly. No, we're going to saute it. Nice wilted kale, but we like it. So again, if foods you like, that's what you want to serve. I want to know what everyone else is making. I want your listeners to call in and tell me what their menus are so I can get some ideas.
Well, again, the number is 212-433-9692. What about avocados?
Avocados, I think, are some of them. I mean, they're so creamy and so luscious. What could be sexier than a ripe, delicious avocado?
But the problem is getting them ripe. They're always hard as a rock.
Yes.
And then so you buy them and you let them sit in the house for, you hope, a week.
And then you have that 1 hour where they're perfect. And if you're not there during that 1 hour, I know I buy so many rock hard avocados and then I forget about them. And then the day I finally get to them, they're too soft and then they're mushy. So,
but how do you use them? Do you make guacamole or do you just use them in a salad?
I just eat them. You know, when I have them, I take the pit out, I put a little bit of lemon juice and salt and maybe some olive oil, and I just scoop them out and I just eat them. You know, the first time I ever had an avocado, I was a kid and my mother halved it, took the pit out and put kirsch and confectioner's sugar on it and served it for dessert, and I thought it was horrible. But
you weren't ready for the kirsch.
I wasn't ready for the whole dessert. I mean, I'd never had one before, and it just, I don't know, I think while I like them sweet now as an adult, I think as a kid it's a kind of disappointing dessert. So maybe don't serve avocado for dessert tonight. Serve it in a salad.
Now, do you pick out certain kinds of avocados? You insist on having a Haas? What about those big green, shiny things?
Yeah, those Florida ones. You know, those are good too. I don't think they have as high a fat content. So they're much leaner. And really, avocado, when you want an avocado, you really want that creaminess.
To be honest, I call them something else. I don't think they're avocados.
What do you think they are?
Another vegetable.
You just call them just call them those green things.
The big green things that I won't buy.
You know, here's another good thing for people. If you are thinking about a last-minute Valentine's Day dessert, there's a recipe that was circulating the web, and I actually did a version of it, which you can find on nytimes/dining. It's a one-ingredient chocolate mousse. So say that you have some nice dark chocolate in your cabinet, which you probably do if you like to bake. All you need is that and water, and you can make a chocolate mousse that's really special. In fact, I will give you guys the recipe so you can have it on your website as well. And people can come and get this recipe. Super simple, one-ingredient chocolate mousse. It's the perfect thing to make for Valentine's Day.
Getting back to avocados before we take some calls, I was in Mexico recently, and a cook told me that the way you can tell when an avocado is ready, do not squeeze it because you're going to bruise it.
Okay.
Just feel the stem.
The stem.
And if it wiggles around easily, the avocado is ready.
Oh, so but –
Or feel the top where the stem is. And if it's soft, then you're ready.
Oh, that's such a good tip. Oh, wow. You might have changed my life.
Let's take some calls. This is John. Hi, John.
Hi. How you doing?
Okay. John from
Fenwood, New Jersey.
Fenwood, New Jersey. Okay. What are you doing for Valentine's Day?
Well, we plan to stay home, and it's lucky because we have miles of snow. But I plan to make a Julia recipe, Supremes de Volée au Champignon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I've done it many times, and it's really good. And I'm serving it over egg noodles.
Oh, that's nice. That's
a little bit of maybe some stir-fried broccoli on the side.
Now, do you feel that it's particularly Valentine's Day-y?
Yeah, it's got mushrooms, it's got cream, it's got chicken, and we have a nice bottle of French rosé champagne too to go with it.
Mm. Oh, see, that combination. That's actually a really nice combination. And
you can have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and French rosé champagne.
That's
dessert.
It'll
be good.
That's dessert.
You can cut those out with a heart-shaped little cookie cutter.
Yeah, I actually, kind of a funny story. I have two stoves in my kitchen right now. I had ordered a new stove, and they couldn't put it in because I didn't have the right plumbing. So I have one brand-new stove that doesn't work, and one old stove that I have to use tonight.
Ah, well, but at least you have the recipe at hand, you have your ingredients, and you have your rosé champagne, so you're in good shape.
Thank you so much for calling us. Our number here, by the way, is 212-433-9692. My guest is Melissa Clark. You read her every Wednesday in the New York Times, where she has a weekly column called Good Appetite. You can also find her on Twitter, where her handle is at Good Appetite. You're in a rut there, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. I got to break out.
This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and Roberto from Westchester is on the air. Hi, Roberto.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay.
So I just wanted to comment about the artichokes and the asparagus. I'm from Spain. I'm from the north of Spain. And actually, in this small town, Tudela, which is in Navarra, which is famous for all the, precisely for these veggies, you know. And so I just wanted to comment on one of the things that you were talking about the artichokes and the wine. You know, I think that, you know, depends how you cook the artichokes. You know, they can go really well with the wine. You know, I would tell you to go there and try them. You know, they're great. You know?
How do you make them wine friendly?
I think that they are actually the kind of artichokes that are in there. They are actually, I think that probably they're not bitter at all. They're very sweet, as opposed to some of the bitterness that the artichokes may have a little bit. And also, the traditional way to do it is with a little bit of ham, you know, in olive oil and a little bit of small pieces of ham. Like a Spanish ham, you know. So that's the kind of that's the way it goes.
Okay,
that sounds good to me. And you know, that's
anything
true
with Spanish ham sounds good to me.
But I think that's a really good point. It's that you can make artichokes don't have to be not friendly to wine, and certain wines do go well with artichokes. It's just sort of, I guess, that's sort of a blanket statement that they're not as, say, easily paired.
Well, if you're steaming them, could you put a little wine in the water, and wouldn't that make them a little wine friendlier?
That would help. And also, I think the ham is a great idea. If you eat meat, ham, and I mean, that ham goes with any kind of wine, I think. So, and I think that really helps. It just makes, it gives it a savory kind of earthy quality.
But you
well,
could also use bacon or pancetta.
Yeah, bacon or pancetta would be fantastic. Cheese, Parmesan cheese and artichokes, that helps too.
Mm. Anne, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. This is a meal that I would traditionally make when we had all our kids home. I would first decorate the table like a whole Valentine, have homemade Valentines for each child and my husband, of course. And then I would make a heart-shaped puff pastry with a mixture of salmon, rice, and cream spinach. It actually tastes delicious together, and would enclose it all in a big heart-shaped puff pastry. And then I would make heart-shaped meringue tarts that I would fill with pink whipped cream and fresh strawberries and, of course, little chocolate hearts on top. And it was always a big hit.
Now, Anne, do you make your own puff pastry or do you buy,
no, I would
get the store bought?
I would use the Pepperidge Farm sheets and just take that easy shortcut. Sometimes, I would use that for the puff pastry, but the meringues I do make because they're so easy to do.
That sounds beautiful.
And if you put the meringues through a little pastry bag, it just makes it so pretty. It's so easy. And then I would make with the leftover meringue filling, I would do little leftover hearts from meringues and stick those on top. And they're just a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for calling us.
That sounds like I love that. That's such a kid-friendly meal, too, you know, because you have the big pastry and everyone loves to cut into that. And then, of course, the meringues. And it sounds really lovely.
Suzanne from Montclair. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. So this idea was a big hit for our anniversary last year. And I hulled some large, medium to large strawberries. I used the end of a peeler. It seemed to be just the right shape to get the hole in the center of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I dipped them into melted chocolate. You can use the pre-made kind from the store or do as you suggested, Melissa, and melt any kind of chocolate with some milk. And into the hulled center, so then you sit those on wax paper, and then into the hulled center you pour Godiva chocolate liqueur.
Oh.
And this is one of those foods, Melissa, that you said you could feed to one another, which we did. So,
oh, that's great. That's actually perfect. And, you know, that's another thing about strawberries. Not only are they the right color, they look like hearts, some of them, especially the big ones. Once you take the hull out, like you were just saying, so taking the hull out just means cutting out that, you know, the green top, but you cut into it a little bit, and it's really easy to make your strawberry look like a heart.
Thank you for calling us. Sky, is it Skylight?
Skylight.
Hi, Skylight. I have one in my house.
Well,
I don't know
if
it's your relative.
Keeping the water out for you. But if it's not, you can call me on the side. In Ecuador, in the mountainous region, the potato is a very favored thing, and they make locro with it, which is their national soup, potato soup.
Mm-hmm.
And it always has some slices of avocado swimming in the bowl when they serve it to you. So that's a really good way to have avocado.
And there's a double aphrodisiac there. You've got your potatoes and your avocado. Is it a chicken broth base? Is it like a, or?
It's Ecuadorian.
Okay.
Which could be.
Because
the Andes now, there are some wonderful chicken restaurants in New York, Peruvian especially.
Mm-hmm.
So very possible. But that's a very America's meal because potatoes and avocados are both indigenous
right.
to the Americas.
Right. So that's a traditional. Is that? Do you find that to be an aphrodisiac yourself?
Definitely.
Okay.
But
okay.
Almost anything works on me.
Yeah. Well, you are a guy. Thank you for calling. We go to Linda now from Ardsley.
Yeah, hi. You're making me laugh.
were we supposed to make you cry?
Well, my mouth is watering listening all to these wonderful recipes, and I love reading your column, Melissa. I have a recipe that Pierre Frenet put in the paper many years ago, but at the time I thought it was so exotic. It was thin slices of chicken pounded, and you flour that and brown it, and take them out after they're browned, and then you put in a little garlic and chopped shallots, white wine, and some curry. And then you put the chicken back in with some cream and slices of avocado.
Ooh. Okay.
And it's such a wonderful recipe. I'm sure you could Google it on their website.
You know, that is a really I love the combination of the cream and the avocado, and then you're the second person who mentioned a creamy chicken dish for tonight, which I think is
it's a wonderful recipe.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
By the way, you, as we said earlier, you supplied us with, excuse me, two recipes, one for crispy roasted potatoes, which is on our website, and also a bone-in rib steak. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about that rib steak. First of all, bone-in is important, even though it's for two people. Doesn't the bone make it harder to share?
Well, I mean, if you want, actually, in our house, I'll cut the meat off. I'll give my husband the meat, and I'll just take the bone and just kind of gnaw on that.
Because the bone really does add to the flavor?
The bone adds so much flavor. Anytime you cook meat on the bone, you have a little bit of marrow sort of leaking out, and you just have more flavor than if you cut the bone off before you cook it. Some people like to cut the meat off the bone first and then tie the meat to the bone so you get the flavor and then you don't have to worry about carving it after. You can just take the meat off. But what I usually do is I cook it on the bone, I carve the meat, just use a very sharp knife and just carve it right off the bone, and then you can slice it. And it looks really nice and it just adds that extra flavor. And then when no one's looking, you can just go in the kitchen and nibble on those little charred edges, which are so tasty.
But you also use brown sugar and chili powder.
Just a touch. Just a little bit. The brown sugar is so little. It's just enough to
help it caramelize?
To help it caramelize. Yeah, it really helps with that char. And chili, just a little bit, just for a sort of smoky heat. But the most important thing, even if you don't want to use brown sugar or chili, just take your steak, salt and pepper it ahead. I really believe in salt and peppering steak ahead. Even if it's just 20 minutes, let it sit on the counter, let it come to room temperature, and it absorbs the seasonings, and it's so much better seasoned all the way through.
Well, you also rub a half of a garlic clove over it.
Yes.
But how do you know when it's done? You're only cooking it on one side.
Okay, so what's so great about this technique is that you heat the skillet, and you heat your broiler at the same time. So you cook, you get, your broiler is searing the top of the steak and your skillet is searing the bottom of the steak. I find that when I try to flip a steak in the oven, I don't get good brown, I get kind of meh browning on both sides because I like my meat really rare. And if you like your meat rare, you won't have enough time to get the good char unless you really preheat the pan, and then the broiler takes care of it. So you get char on both sides, you get nicely cooked meat, and it's also, I find it pretty easy. It's an easy technique, you know, just sear and then stick it in the oven, and then it's done.
And Michael LaMonaco, who knows something about cooking steaks.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Because he has a restaurant called Porterhouse. Yeah. He told me that you know when it's cooked when you put your thumb on it, and it feels exactly the same as when you put your thumb into the space between the other thumb and your first finger.
Yes, exactly. That's a good trick. What they say is that if you make a fist and you touch that and you touch that muscle right between your thumb and your forefinger, if you make a fist, that is well done meat. If you loosen it and you just let your hand relax, that is rare meat, and then anything in between. So I do the poke test all the time. But if you're not used to the poke test, that's I just call it the poke test, because you just poke the meat with your finger. You can just cut. I mean, you really can cut into it and take a little peek, and then you can see if it's done or not. That's perfectly acceptable.
Meanwhile, you can read Melissa Clark's columns every Wednesday in the New York Times, A Good Appetite, in the dining section, also at newyorktimes.com, and you can follow her on Twitter, where her handle is @goodappetite. Melissa, it's always so much fun to have you on the show.
Great to be here.